All right, Steve Palmer here, Lawyer Talk Podcast, and you can check us out at lawyertalkpodcast.com here with another episode of They Don't Teach You That in Law School. And this one's a, we'll call it a super special episode, because on this day, literally this day, February 27th, 2018, I recorded the first Lawyer Talk Podcast. And this is going way back. The studio didn't exist. I didn't have all the fancy mics. I was up in my office upstairs. And it was awkward. It was a little bit bizarre, but we got it done. That was our first podcast 400 episodes later. So today is number 400 to the day in 2025. We are here at the table in the podcast, in our studio podcast realm. And we've got you guys, or I'm sure just glued to be part of my 400th episode. And it's taken the podcast has taken a lot of turns over the years. We've had started with one of my associates and just me at the table, and then we added somebody, and then we added another person. We had some fun times. So anybody who's curious about, I took a break at different times during COVID, but anybody who's curious about the evolution of it, go check out those early episodes. They are really funny. I mean, we used to get lots of, it started as sort of like a serious legal podcast, and then we quickly turned it into fun. Just my buddies and me at the table having fun. We used to do a news episode. So we would drop a normal one in the week, and then we would say, I would do a news on Fridays. So we would just take, it was like strange news stories of the weird, and we would just go around the table talking. I mean, those were good episodes. So check them out. I promise you'll like them. And you can get this podcast, by the way, wherever you get podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Spotify. Where else do you get them?
YouTube.
Or you can watch it on YouTube.
You can listen on YouTube.
You can now get podcast feeds on YouTube. Yeah. It shows you what I know. But you know, since now we're in the modern era, the post-COVID, it's funny how much things have changed. When we started, video didn't exist. It would have been a huge bridge to cross to stream these things or have video. And when we built the studio, we did it, but we didn't quite have it all set up. But anyway, now we do, and we are going to. We'll jump right to it because I've been yapping about it too long. But this series is They Don't Teach You That in Law School, where we take on topics. You guys are law students. We have Bell Amata. We have Troy Hendrickson. Both are now working upstairs in the law firm. Not both for me, but other people we share space with. So you guys are getting the full rounded education. Not only law school, podcast, and you get to work on real cases. So, boy, what a dream come true. What a dream. Yes. Right. What a dream. Now, we did an episode, and this one's a little bit different than what we've been doing, but we did an episode a week or two ago on Luigi and his murder. And the fanfare from that, or the comments on that, is really sort of interesting. It's fascinating to me. I took a comment earlier today. For those who watch, I'm wearing the same shirt. I took a comment earlier today from somebody who watched that episode and sort of was chastising me a little bit because I didn't acknowledge that Luigi is innocent until proven guilty. So look, I responded to that, and I appreciate the comment. And I sort of discussed that there are two sides to that coin. You know, there's what we know in the real world and what the legal system is and what it does. But then, you know, that sort of got us talking about other topics relevant to this. So let's have at it.
The big thing that I've been seeing a lot recently on Luigi that's been bothering me is since the beginning, we just called it they're putting on a show for Luigi. They're bringing out a lot of force. When he's in the trial, he's shackled up, wearing a bulletproof vest, has like six cops behind him.
You mean when he's in a courtroom, a public courtroom?
Yeah, when he's in the courtroom. And then this is not something I'm just noticing. His lawyer is bringing it up every single hearing. What is going on here? This is, I think she calls him political, political batter.
Political theater?
Yeah, political theater. She's just saying they're using him. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this seems like a decent argument. And then I saw yesterday the Florida school shooter at his trial. No shackles, no bulletproof vest or anything. He's just there. And I was like, okay, well, if Luigi's so dangerous, why is that guy just free walking around? So I kind of have the question, when does this theater go too far? When does it become too prejudicial? When can the court strike down and be? I understand it'd be crazy to say somebody who maybe committed murder is not guilty because we can't give him a fair trial through the theater. But where is the line in the sand? When does it begin?
Well, there's an interest. Ironically, this is a law school type discussion, right? This is the kind of crap that you might banter around in law school. Mm-hmm. And in the real world, it's quite the, it's sort of the opposite. Like we, because the answer is probably not anything anybody wants to hear. It's like probably never is really the answer.
Yeah.
But there's some limits, and there's the Supreme Court has recognized some outer limits at times. And we've talked about a few of those, I think, with you guys at the table. But, you know, there's a famous case right out of Ohio, Sam Shepard.
And we talked about the Cleveland guy,
the doc from Cleveland, and they actually made a movie about him, and then before that was a TV series called The Fugitive, but with a one-armed man who really did them. Anyway, if you know, you know. But you know, there was so much sensation surrounding that trial that the U.S. Supreme Court basically said it was unfair, and you have to redo it. But then you get to this point where today's day and age, you know, that was the Cleveland Plain Dealer in local news. And probably some other national papers, but really they were talking about prejudice locally. But today's day and age, where could you ever, like, imagine if that case were today, it would be everywhere. I mean, it would be on everybody's phone, everybody's laptop, everybody's TV, everybody's podcast. And, you know, Luigi's sort of like that. So when does it go too far? Well, I don't know. But what if it does go too far? What's the remedy? I mean, where's, if he can't, if the only remedy, in other words, is if somehow this deprives him of an opportunity for a fair trial. So let's dig into it a little bit more. I mean, what's the stage of the proceedings right now with Luigi?
I believe he's had his arraignment. They haven't done any type of like pre-motions, hearings over those, but just arraignment, I think, on the state. And then, what is the federal one called? It's a,
preliminary. We have a preliminary hearing. You have a detention hearing.
Yeah. I think they've done that on the federal end. That's it.
Okay.
So I believe that's where he's at right now. So, I mean, it's still really early. But they haven't had all discovery yet either. That was another complaint. But I mean, it's pretty early. People were talking about like Brady violations, they don't have to immediately give you everything. They have time.
They have a reasonable amount of time to get you discovery. And a Brady violation is a violation that occurs when the prosecutor does not hand over exculpatory or helpful evidence. It hasn't been long enough for that to occur yet, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, and usually that's something that smokes out before trial. But
yeah.
What we're really talking about here is like you get these sensational cases. And maybe they start with the initial perp walk. You know, the guy's frog marched on TV after the raid in his house. I mean, there's been some great ones in the last 5 years, not the least of which is the raid at Trump's Mar-a-Lago. You know, that was sensationalized with what I call stormtroopers and people going in. And there's been some other raids of some of his guys back in, you know, when he was in his first term. There was a guy named Roger Stone. People remember FBI coming in his back door and, you know, just crazy. And what's interesting about these is the point you're bringing up. I represent folks all the time, and Troy, you know this, that are far more dangerous than any of those people.
Yeah.
And far more threatening and far more interesting, really, if you would dig into it. But there's no major FBI raid on those guys. In fact, in a humdrum, run-of-the-mill case, this is happening right now. I've got dozens of these in my file drawer. Client calls me, hey, I'm under investigation for XYZ crime. Maybe it's a drug case. I was pulled over with the police think I had like 5 kilos of coke in my trunk. I say 5 kilos because that happens. That's a lot of cocaine in the criminal world.
I call that a normal amount. I call that Tuesday night. I'm sorry.
Well, people think like it's, yeah. So anyway, and you know, they let me go. So what do I do? I say, well, come on in. We'll have a meeting. I'll talk to him about it. And I'll say, who is the detective? And maybe it's a federal state task force. Who knows? Maybe it's just local cops. And I'll pick up the phone and I'll say, hey, Detective Flanagan, Steve Palmer here, calling on behalf of Joe Blow. You like what I did there?
Yeah.
Calling on behalf of Joe Blow. I understand that you took some substances from him that you suspect to be cocaine. I'm just checking in. What can you tell me? And he gets really creepy. They get weirded out by this question because they're used to asking the questions. And they say, well, what's he want to do? I said, well, what's going on with the case? What, does your client want to talk to us? What's going on with the case? So we have this little dance we do. But anyway, it's pretty casual. I mean, you had a guy was saying, say he had guns and 5 bricks. You know, it's like those guys get let go all the time. There's no perp walk. There's no frog march. There's no nothing. Sometimes there is. But it's not that big a deal. And then what I would do is I would say, eventually I'd try to get to the spot where, all right, detective, who are you working with? Meaning what prosecutor's office? Is it a federal case? Is it a state case? I would then reach out to the prosecutor's office, say, hey, look, I'm representing Joe Blow. Please give me a call if you guys are going to do anything with this case, and we'll cooperate any way we can. Meaning if you got him indicted or you want to charge him, we will come to you. He's got a lawyer. Me, you know me, or maybe you don't, but look me up, and we'll bring him there. There's a really famous case where this happened and blew up on the cops. You know what it is?
Oh, man.
Resulted in a low-speed police chase.
Oh.
In a white Ford Bronco.
Right? Oh, the OJ.
Right. So that happened. It's exactly what happened in that case. They had OJ Simpson, and I think Kardashian calls up the cops and arranges a surrender. We'll be there at 2 o'clock or one, whenever it was. He didn't show. And it was a debacle. So sometimes you get a real violent guy, they just have to go make the arrest. And that was egg on the face of the cops.
The thing is, like, we've had it upstairs where we've been working with the prosecutors, and like they will file the indictment and arrest warrants like underneath our noses, like try to sneak it in.
Sometimes
and like,
that happens.
And I was like, we've had it upstairs, and I was like, this is insane. Like, why would you?
That do happened this? In a case that we were working on in the last 6 months. And basically, we had been in constant contact with the prosecutor's office all along. And I kept saying, anything new, nothing. And then one day, I look online, and there's an indictment and a warrant for my client's arrest. And I call up the prosecutor. I was like, what in the F are you doing? What are you talking about? I told you I'm representing him. The case has been pending investigation for inexplicably, mind you, there's no reason for the delay, mm-hmm. for 6 months. And now you... today on a Friday, indict him and issue a warrant. What's wrong with that? And, you know, I would give him the effective middle finger, you know. It's like, come on. So it does happen, but a lot of times it's the courtesy is acknowledged, particularly in those kind of cases. And so then you would ask, what cases are different? I think OJ's would have been different. I never, if I were the police or prosecutor, I would have had that guy in cuffs day one. That was a blunder. The case we're talking about on the other side of the spectrum is a perfect case. Just arrange, just mm-hmm. summons the guy. You know, it's not a violent crime. It was a hit skip, by the way, folks, meaning there's a leaving the scene of an accident. It's like, you know, it's not a violent crime. He's got no prior record, no history of fleeing. He's got a job. He's got a family. You know, it's like you don't need to issue a warrant and grab that guy in cuffs. Sometimes prosecutors do it. I guess they have their prerogative.
They didn't really have to arrest OJ. I mean,
it was just a double murder.
Yeah, I mean, he was found not guilty, you know.
But he was innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah,
so look, that's a perfect, back to our comment, that's a perfect example. You can look at the OJ case and say, factually speaking, there's that new Netflix series out there too. You can look at it and say, factually, that guy probably guilty.
There's a good Fox News interview with him where he goes over his book, and there's like a chapter called Hypothetically.
Yeah,
like,
if I would have done it. Right.
And he's like, hypothetically. And he like just goes into insane detail. And she's like asking questions. He's like, I don't want to go into that detail. And I'm like, well, hypothetically, can you go into that right. detail?
So if you look at the case sort of as a looking back, factually speaking, in the real world, as I said in my podcast addressing that comment, probably guilty. But in the courtroom world, they didn't prove it. So look, both things can be true at once. That is the beauty of our system. The protections are there, even for OJ, who everybody thought was guilty. The protections are still there. And the prosecutor's got to bring into the courtroom evidence that's going to prove to the jury beyond a reasonable doubt that OJ's guilty. And you could say the jury got it wrong. You could say that it was a fix. You could say that the dream team overwhelmed. Whatever you're going to say, they still have to do it. And if you don't force that in OJ's case, and if we don't force that in Luigi's case, when it's your case or your son's case or your wife's case or your husband's case, guess what? There'll be no more protection for you if you're innocent. So that's why we do it. Now, back to the real topic, which is the perp walk and the sensationalism. They do it for show, right? Mm-hmm. It's a political show.
Yeah. I feel like every high-profile case is probably going to argue that they're not going to get a fair trial. But with the rise of social media and stuff, I feel like they can't use that like almost as a cop-out because – I don't know, these high-profile cases, they gain a lot of attention through the media, and it's like they can't just not cover it.
Mm-hmm. I agree that the social media is, like, making it way easier.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, like, I think the state should almost take extra steps to ensure they're not going too far. Like, in Luigi's, like, the Brady violation stuff they were talking about was, you know, the defense brings up, hey, the mayor and the prosecutor went on and did a documentary of Netflix bringing up evidence that I don't have yet. Like, right, so it's like,
that's not a Brady violation. It's just something that needs to be supplied in discovery soon.
I didn't think it was a Brady violation.
But they are, right. But the comments, that's when people don't quite understand it.
But why would you go do a doc? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, yes, social media is bad. There's going to be a lot of comments. Like, why would you add to the fire by doing
there should
a
maybe be some
grandstanding lawyers is as old as the profession itself. Why? Because we're egotistical assholes at times, right? I mean, we have to, like, we have huge egos. And a lot of times you have the, you can just picture the old South prosecutors on the steps of the courthouse, you know, grandstanding, this or that. And I've defense lawyers do it too. But, you know, it doesn't seem as bad when defense lawyers do it because we're slimy anyway, right? They just think you're just a slimy, you're just doing it. But when you see prosecutors do it, when you see prosecutors grandstanding, it's troubling because it somehow makes you feel that they're biased, that it's not fair, that they're prosecuting, that they're doing things for their own ego instead of for justice. And, you know, they're going to, or their own political gain instead of for justice, maybe. And that's, I think that's what bothers us about this is like you get a prosecutor going on 60 Minutes or going on TV, giving interviews about the case. I think you're right. It's a really bad look. I wouldn't do it. And if I were in charge of that prosecutor's office, I sure as heck wouldn't let anybody do it. I would say, listen, OJ's case is like every other case. You know, be mindful that we're dealing with flack that you're not going to get, but we're going to treat it like somebody who we're going to prosecute and prove guilty. We're not going to cut corners. We're not going to do anything unfair. We're going to prosecute this guy. Now, we got to be ready for the onslaught, but we're going to prosecute this guy. Luigi the same way. Look, this guy, we've got good evidence against this guy. There are eyewitnesses of him doing this crime in cold blood. We're going to go into the courtroom. We're going to supply all the evidence that we should, and we're going to prove him guilty. And I think if I wanted to defuse the notion that he's not getting a fair shake, then I think treating him like ordinary business is what you would do. Meaning, and that includes, so I'm taking the defense aside on this, that includes not dragging him out in the pickle suit or in shackles. And the pickle suit is something they put on a pickle suit. If you're in jail and they think you're a suicide risk, they put you in a pickle suit. But
that was called like a turtle suit.
Not turtle suit, yeah, pickle suit, whatever.
That's kind of potato.
Pickle turtle. But yeah, and I think that shows a little bit of unfairness. And I think you compromise the prosecutor. You compromise the integrity of your prosecution a little bit doing that. Now, have you guys covered when it's a problem? Because there is a threshold that can be crossed. And you may not have gotten there in criminal procedure yet.
I've not. I just want to know where the line is, because in my head, like, imagine they say, like, I'm just going to put it hypothetically. Imagine they say, Luigi, they're like, hey, you went too far. Can you imagine telling the family of the victim, like, hey, sorry, we couldn't give the, we got to retry the guy because we wanted to just do a bunch of, we wanted to do a nice little perp walk, bring the mayor in. This Netflix documentary was great, but we got to put you through the trial again.
I don't think they're there, but there's a couple, the outer limits might be the Shepherd case. And then at trial, there are rules. When I'm representing somebody in custody at trial, I make the argument that I don't want the jury to see my guy in jail garb or leg shackles or leg irons or handcuffs. Constitutionally, I'm entitled to that. So they can't drag him out there in front of the jury deciding his guilt in shackles unless he needs it, meaning every now and then you get these guys who just no matter what you do, they're going to be impossible. So, and I've had those. Like, I had a murder case here in Columbus. And it was a good self-defense murder case. It was a great case. And we were trying, it was all over the news. That was back in the days when the news was still at court and there were reporters there and there were TV cameras there. And sometimes they still are, but, you know, it was a packed courtroom and it was all over the place. And every night, or you would see it on the nightly news. And we started out, my guy was out on bond and he showed up in his white shirt and pants and whatever. But, you know, there was a little bit of an outburst in the courtroom and the police had to take him down in open court and put him in cuffs. So he had to be in shackles the rest of the time. But I still was able to get like a drape around. So the jury comes back the next day and like they're supposed to not know he's in cuffs, but now there's this drape around the table and like he's got leg irons and, you know, it was
just doing some decorating. You know? just wanted to make it feel a little more homey.
But I can't say he deserved it because I was arguing about whether that was appropriate or not, but they did it and they were able to justify it. But just starting that way, they can't. Now, there's another concern about Luigi, and that is protecting him. You get a case like this where you get a lot of opinions on it. You know, is he a cold-blooded, rotten executioner, or is he the champion for the cause? You know, what is it? Who is he? Mm-hmm. Either way, he might be in some danger. Mm-hmm. So having him surrounded by cops wearing a bulletproof vest as they marshal him in and out of court might be for his own safety as much as everybody else's.
The what's the one guy who can't think of his name right now who shot Kennedy's killer?
Ruby or Oswald?
Oswald.
You said who shot Kennedy's killer or Kennedy?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Kennedy's killer was Oswald, right?
Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah. We don't now we're going to release some documents.
Yeah. We got to figure that innocent until proven guilty, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a good point because, I mean, they brought him out. I've, like, watched that. That was, like, news cameras, everything.
Oswald!
Boom. Boom. I was, like, that was, like, insane to be, like, wow, like, this happened in your town in, like, 24 hours. Like, all this. This is, like, insane.
Yeah, so think about that. You know, that's, like, the old days. You know, those kind of perp walks were common. Mm-hmm. And the press would be there for that. Like, that would never happen today like that.
There's a good one on Nat Geo on it where they bring him out, actually, and they do, like, a press conference. They, like, bring him out to the room. All the media's there. Like, all right, just everybody start asking questions. He just, like, started. And I was like, this is insane. Like, what if
I'm
this happened?
I'm a patsy.
Like, what if this happened today?
No, it's crazy. And that's why, you know, our standards of what we believe is fair and acceptable evolve. And now we all think that there's no way that would be fair and acceptable. But back then they did. And, you know, it's like it's hard to look at this objectively and say we're going to judge what they did in 1963 based on what we do now, because what we do now is based on what the problems that emerge. You know, we don't. If you think you're smart enough to foresee every single problem and every single issue and every single virtue, then you know, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have our virtue now based on all the mistakes we made in the past.
Right.
And that's the evolution of common law.
I feel like the problem I have, though, is you also said that if they were trying to protect him, whenever they asked him, though, they said that, like, he's dangerous. And in my head, why didn't the state just say it's for his protection? And then in my head, like, you have – that's a great answer.
So
why not say that?
Here's the thing. We're not seeing everything, all right? So always take this stuff with a grain of salt. You now, Troy, and Bella, you soon will start to see these hearings in open court. And, you know, there's a lot going on. And if you wanted, if you were a little bit interested in creating a sensational soundbite, you could probably clip out only parts that said we're doing it because we think he's dangerous and then leave out like the 5 minutes before that where they say, look, we've had lots of threats against him. We've had lots of we're concerned that somebody's going to try to hurt him. We're concerned about this. We're concerned about that. So maybe it's both. And I'm not suggesting that happened because I don't know. I just got a nose for things. If I were a prosecutor, I would be worried. If I were a law enforcement prosecutor in that case, I would be worried about that guy's safety, and that would be my lead. And second to that would be, and look, he killed somebody in cold blood. Now, as a defense lawyer, the flip side of that is, well, look, fair enough, you want to protect him, but how is he any more dangerous than the other murderers that you got?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in fact, he's probably less dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, right. I was bringing up, like, the Florida kid. I mean, at the end of the day, like, there's people who have committed way worse crimes, and then even you're saying the people that – I mean, I've met some people while working here that are way worse than him, and it's just like – I mean, these guys
are – Yeah, they're out.
Yeah, yeah, they're just out walking around. I was like,
yeah,
this
on bond.
Yeah, I was like, this is insane. I was like, wow.
I'm wondering, and I hope this doesn't sound wrong, but I'm wondering if it depends kind of on who the victim was to. Like, in that case, it was a large CEO or, like, Kennedy – or even, let's say, the one that shot Trump. I know he died, but like if he was still around, I think it kind of, I don't know.
I think that's a very fair consideration. The victim totally is a lot of the equation.
It's the case. How big is the case? Because look, if your mother is shot and killed, to you, that's the most important case in the world. And it might even be frustrating that why do we give a crap about this other thing when this is going on in my world? But, you know, news, sensational stories sell, and the media will make a story out of it. And I guess if you turn back the clock, have you guys read To Kill a Mockingbird?
I actually did read
Harper,
that, but
Harper
years
Lee.
Ago.
I might have sparked
maybe
it.
Seen the movie.
Yeah, I had to in school. But
I mean, my son's read that in middle school, I think. But anyway.
I just didn't know what Spark Notes was in. That's what I'm saying.
Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird. I won't get into the details of it then. But and how about, and there was a movie, Gregory Peck movie. And then there's another movie called A Time to Kill, a John Grisham book that they made a movie on. Matthew McConaughey's in that, Sandra Bullock. But
well, if he's in it, then I should probably watch it. He's a national treasure. He's amazing. he's amazing.
Right, right, all right, all right. Yeah. So, but it they sort of harken back to a time when our entertainment was a court case, the sensational murder case in the courthouse that sat in the town square that had the second story balcony, and people would go. That's what you did. You know, that was like going to the movies. And standing room only in courtrooms, and that was our entertainment. We didn't have movies. We didn't have the kind of media that is out there. But I think the concept has maintained. You know, the thread is still there. We don't go to the courthouse to watch it. We just watch it on TV, and people love it. People eat it up. People eat this podcast up. People love it because the law, particularly criminal law, man, it somehow. Captures our interest in human psychology.
It's the most exciting law, hands down.
Like, yeah, mm-hmm. I fell in love with it.
I don't think I could do anything else because
it's dumb. Don't do this. Right. It's a really hard way to earn a living.
Every transcript is like every girl I've talked to, they always have like obsessive like certain books, and I'm like, I read like the most exciting book right. every single day. Like I'm reading some right. crazy yeah. stuff.
So, but
off
think
the
about that, man. I mean, it's like the characters that we deal with in a case. You get to see people, you get to hear them, you get to know them and put yourself in their shoes. And then there's a victim, which, you know, what's screwed up about our psychology that we love hearing this stuff. I don't know, but it captures people's attention. And as long as it does that, and that'll probably happen forever, we're going to have this media blitz about everything. And as long as we have the media blitz about everything, it's going to tickle the most dangerous part of any human psychology. And that's our egos and our quest for attention and power and clout or whatever. And that's going to get the prosecutors grandstand. It's going to get the defense attorneys with big egos fighting it out on the courthouse steps. That's part of it. And that means that the media is also going to, I mean, they're going where the fish are. So the money is these clips of the perp walk. So we're going to give them that. And that's what happens.
I think of the interview. Who is it? Seth Rogen and James Franco.
Seth Rogen mm-hmm. or Joe Rogan?
Seth Rogen. Yeah, it's the Korean movie where they pretend.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, James Franco's like, they want the shit, feed them the shit.
So one more thing, they don't teach you that in law. They teach you this in law school. See, I've represented over the years, I don't know, a dozen or so really high publicity cases, the kind that maybe even the national media that would want to, that has been there and followed it, ESPN on one case, and you know, just big stuff, and. I've learned that you have to, the media is like a vacuum. It's going to fill up with something. And if as a practicing criminal defense lawyer, I have to be mindful of that. So if I don't provide any commentary or any statements to the media, well, they're going to find something to fill up that time about my case because there's interest in it. And we have ethical rules that we have to follow. I have to be careful about what I can say and what I can't say. I'm not going to repeat things that are privileged, and I'm not going to overpromise things because you don't want to say, well, they're never going to be able to prove this guy guilty beyond a reasonable doubt ever, ever, ever. And then I get the discovery and I'm like, maybe they can. So now you got to eat crow. But you have to fill it with something. And I have learned to control the perp walk. If I've had a court case or something, I will have somebody at my office drop us off in front of the courthouse and I'll walk in with my client. And usually the media knows because I've interacted with them throughout the case. They're not going to be a barrage. They don't have to honor that, and they don't always. But like if we're a prick to the media throughout a case, they're not going to be on your side. Even if this is true whether your client's guilty or not guilty. You know, you've got to manage that, and it's a dance that you learn over time. Because if you give them nothing, then they'll fill it with what they want. If you give them too much, now you've gone too far. So there's a medium there. Now I have been in a situation where we actually drove into the blocked off gated garage in federal court and were dropped off there because it was so crazy. And the prosecutor knew we were doing that. I did it with their permission or their acquiescence, and the judge knew. But that was how crazy it was. So we came in literally the judge's entrance. Which was an interesting experience. But Anyway, that I guess that sort of covers the topic. You know, is it fair that this guy, that Luigi or these other people are in chains and shackles and they're making a news sensation about it? Is it fair that they raid political criminal targets, whether they're guilty or not guilty, with all the costume dress just to make a show? Is it fair that the guy, the school shooter, the alleged school shooter down in Florida, doesn't have shackles on, but Luigi does? Is it fair that we have a murder client right now who's walking the streets on bond and has been for 2 years? No, none of it's fair. And if you think you're looking for fairness, guess what? You're not going to find it in the justice system. Our job is to make it as fair as we can. But if you think you're going to compare your situation, it's going to be the same as this one and the same as that one, it's not.
Even Trump's mugshot, I feel like that was just for show. I mean, he has like the most famous face on the planet. He really didn't need to have that mugshot taken. But
well,
I like his little pose.
I know.
Yeah, but for his part, Trump understood the value of that. You know, he understood that. So Trump has got some insight into this stuff. I think maybe, you know, he's been in the public eye and had his own TV show. So he's got some insight into mm-hmm. this. Like he's the king troll, right?
He put it on a mug. And
like, so what's he do? He turns that into his asset.
Right.
And maybe that's a great point you're bringing up, because what's Luigi do? Turn it into an asset. Yeah. You know, folks, how am I supposed to get a fair trial? What have they tried to do from day one? This kid's committed only, allegedly, one crime his entire life. Other than that, he's had blah, 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 blah. And they're treating him like he's
World's
Hitler.
Worst hitman.
Right. Yeah. You know, they're treating him like the most evil person in the world. They're treating him differently than everybody else that's charged with the same thing. Why is that? What are they trying to say to you? What are they trying to get you to buy into? You know, you can use that. You know, there's Aikido, I think, is the martial art where you take the other person's force and turn it on them. I use that as an analogy all the time in criminal defense. Let's do some Aikido here. You know, if they're coming at us with this, let's turn it on them. And you know, if this, I often say, even the bully sometimes gets sympathy when the backlash is too much. You know, you can punish the bully, you can kick his ass, but you can't keep kicking his ass until he's dead. You know, you've got to, at some point, you got to let him up. And I think maybe the system learned a little bit in the Trump cases about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point, you got to let him up. And if you don't, then he starts to get some sympathy. Or in the Luigi case, if I'm representing him, you know, at some point, you're going too far and it's not fair. So is it, can we do something to stop it? Well, you can't bottle up human emotion and effectively, but you can turn it. You know, you can use it and educate a jury and educate the public about this. So if I'm the defense attorneys, I'm on the courthouse steps and that's my comment. Look, we don't even have all the evidence yet, folks. They're on TV talking to Netflix, talking to 60 Minutes about evidence that they haven't even given us. They're bringing this kid in with an army of cops who should be on the streets doing what their job is. And how am I, you know, what's fair about any of this? Give us a fair shake. That's all we're asking. You know, and you know, you start to sow those seeds and you get maybe some action out of that. But anyway, well, they didn't teach you any of that. Maybe this went farther than a discussion you guys get in law school. Probably.
It's usually not this in depth. We're also trying to, we got to give everybody else talking time too, so you don't get everything you want.
We're the smartest people at the table.
I mean, yes, we are the smartest.
I mean, this table.
Oh, yeah. right. Any other table? No. We're like, bother.
Right. All right. Well, lawyertalkpodcast.com. They don't teach you that in law school. If you've got a topic you want us to cover, maybe you're a law student. Maybe you're thinking, man, I wish I had these people in our classroom setting and to kick this around. Give us a shout, send us a comment at lawyertalkpodcast.com. Shoot us a comment on the socials. Where are we now? We're on YouTube and is TikTok still around? We still have TikTok?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're not talking.
I'm not talking too much. It's ticking. It's not talking.
All right. Well, anyway, we're on the socials or Facebook and YouTube, and you can check us always out at the website. So leave us a comment or send us a question and we'll cover it here. Maybe, just maybe, if you're a law student out there, you want to join, we got the TV up here. You can join remotely. We'll talk about doing that too. So anyway, Lawyer Talk, they don't teach you that in law school. Off the record, on the air, until next week.